Been a full day today with our gathering, preparing all the doing all the preparations for this afternoon's ceremony. People did a lot of work. I didn't do much, but everybody else seemed to be working hard to set up for the influx of people and the lovely flower arrangements for the offering of the new Buddha image in our just outside this hall here, and then the ceremonies, chanting, and Dhamma reflections to commemorate the new Buddha image, as well as Lungpo Cha's birthday celebration, which was his birthday. Actually, would have been yesterday, but today is our celebration day of that. So lots of great energy and goodwill today, a lot of energy expended, so aim to not go on too long tonight. People probably looking forward to a bit of a rest. But just a few thoughts that have come up around the lineage. Our lineage, celebrating Lungpo Cha, his birthday, and just reflecting on what that means, what it has meant for all of us here, and for many, many, I don't know how many millions of people have been affected in some way or another by this one man's life. And the legacy that he has left in the form of a dispensation that is really worldwide now. Ajahn Chah Monastery is all over the world. And students and disciples of his that have gained incredible benefit from his presence and his teachings. We've been very fortunate the past couple of weeks, and for another week or so to come, of having Lungpo Sumedho here at the monastery, offering support and teachings. One of Ajahn Chah's most senior disciples, senior Western disciple especially, and of course our own Lungpo Pasano, who's spent many years directly with Lungpo Cha. And how fortunate we are to, even though pretty much most of the rest of us, I don't think, actually ever met Ajahn Chah, that we are blessed with being in the presence of two senior Western disciples of his who spent much time with him and can pass on his teachings and their own teachings as they've benefited. So kind of a review of the blessings of living with the direct disciples of Lungpo Cha and receiving all the benefits from that. And in a form, a teaching that I think comes through all three of them, that's unique and special and not to be dismissed lightly. I was recalling or reflecting, remembering there was a conference some years ago of monastics, Western Buddhist monastics, in which Bhikkhu Bodhi was present and offering some of his reflections. I actually wasn't at that conference, but I heard some of the recorded teachings from that and read some of the transcripts from some of those. And the point that struck me very strongly was a period where Bhikkhu Bodhi was reflecting on the teachings, the Buddhist teachings as they've come to the West. And of course, all the wonderful things that have been developed and presented and practiced as the teachings have come to the West. But that there seemed to be, in general, a scarcity of teachings in two areas, the first one being renunciation, the second one being transcendence. And how, you know, as the teachings have come to the West primarily through retreat centers and practice centers that have focused mostly on meditation, and sometimes not involving or including the entire path, but that how, you know, and he was addressing a group of monastics at that time, of course, but how the monastic tradition has the opportunity and also the obligation, in some sense, to bring up a more comprehensive presentation of what the Buddha's teachings are about, are all about, and especially to include more aspects related to those two areas, renunciation and transcendence. And when I think about that, I think that when I think of those, our three teachers that I'm referring to today, of Lumpur Cha, Lumpur Sumedho, Lumpur Pasano, that those aspects have come to us and have been emphasized constantly, they've constantly reminded us of the importance of the fullness of the practice, the fullness of the path, and that it takes a tremendous amount of commitment to walk this path and to realize the goal, and a tremendous amount of energy and persistence and patience to do that. So that to me is sort of what, thinking about all the goodness that's come, especially as we reflect today, that it's this fullness of training and this incredible determination to see it through. And it's heartening to know that all of them have had their moments of intense challenge in this path that they've brought to us, and the benefits that they've brought to us from engaging in this training, and how human, you know, the qualities are that they've had to confront, deal with, and transcend. And the stories that we hear, say, from Ajahn Chah, to begin with, from Lumpur Cha, of the, you know, incredible commitment and non-complacency that he exhibited and that he talked about, his determination to just to use this life, to not waste this life, and to offer himself just for this lifetime to completely developing the practice as best he could in this one lifetime, not to look beyond that, but that, you know, with his perspective, and of course most of our perspective, I think, of multiple lifetimes, we've been doing all of this kind of stuff for incomprehensible number of lifetimes, that it's not too much to ask to use this one precious lifetime, this opportunity that we have, to commit ourselves for the rest of our lives to doing the best we can to realize the benefits of the Buddha's teachings. So that just not buckling under with, you know, any kind of complacency or just an unwillingness to see it through, not to buckle into that. And then the trials that he went through, the difficulties, you know, large amounts of sensual desire, sexual desire, that he had to work with. Painful, painful mental, painful physical conditions that he didn't buckle down. He held firm in his resolve to see it through, and the stories of his, you know, dealing with the other side of the emotional realm of anger and aversion that would come up at times, the story of the time where there was a novice at the monastery and the novice was misbehaving in some way or another. And Ajahn Chah got quite angry with this novice. And as I remember the story anyway, I guess, you know, kind of just went after chasing the novice who bolted out and ran away. And Ajahn Chah, Lumbar Cha, catching himself and realizing that he was operating and moving on this strong emotional state and being so strongly affected by that realization that he just disappeared into his kuti for, I think, some days to get to know, get to understand, and see if he could develop some insignificant insight and transcendence of these qualities that had apparently coming out of his kuti, a changed being in many ways. So just that kind of relentless commitment, relentless energy, not to give up. And then when I think, you know, some of the stories that Lungpo Sumedho has told along the same lines of his putting up with it, having to be very patient with some very strong mind states of his own, very strong emotional reactions. Talks often of his kind of righteous indignation, having to do certain things, practice in certain ways that Lungpo Cha was unrelenting in giving the opportunity for Ajahn Sumedho to see these mind states rising up, frustration and irritability and indignation, that in the training of being a foreign monk who was unfamiliar with the language, the customs, the lifestyle, but his willingness to give himself over to that, no matter what mind states would come up in that process. And Ajahn Chah's ability to see that happening and to direct his attention to guide Ajahn Sumedho into and through those mental states. So the amount of patient endurance, tolerance that Ajahn Sumedho went through for many years in developing that. And then also I think of Lungpo Sumedho and the amount of commitment and patience in bringing the teachings to and developing a Western Buddhist community, and the amount of trials and tribulations and incredibly strong Western views and opinions, people, the nuns and the monks at the monasteries that he was part of, or that he was initiating, and that commitment to developing community, which isn't something that comes easily to Western practitioners, trying to take the Thai model into the West with the emphasis on communal harmony and communal development in very difficult circumstances. And his relentless patience in helping to shape that and develop that and introduce that into our lives here in the West. And when I think of Lungpo Pasano here at Abhayagiri and his unwavering commitment to developing a monastic community, the times that he was at Wat Pananachap from the stories I've heard and then from my own experience here, particularly in the first number of years here at Abhayagiri, just that commitment and sense of him being here for the monastic community. That's the primary reason for his being here. And that it wasn't until Ajahn Amaro was gone for some years that Lumpur Pasano started to feel comfortable that the community had been well established enough to start reaching out and doing a little bit more traveling and teaching, but not before the community had been stabilized, and that continuing to be, obviously he's sitting right here listening to me go on and on rather than being up in his kuti while he's on forest practice. He should be up there. But here he is, and exemplifying that kind of commitment to community and monastic development. And also at the same time being relentlessly available to people, even when he shouldn't be, with his various and sundry health issues and my constantly fretting that he should be taking care of himself better and him not listening to me. Because he has this sense of wanting to be there for everyone as much as he can. So these incredible qualities of endurance and commitment what a legacy that we are inheriting from Ajahn Chah. But also not just in terms of these qualities of, you know, patience and renunciation and following the precepts very closely, sense restraint, these training issues that form such a strong part of our lives and a strong part of our practice here. But also the constant reminders, all three of them, I think, the constant reminders that they give us for transcendence, the potential for actually taking this teaching, taking this training to a point of realization with the potential of complete freedom from that. You know, a lot of the teachings that do come, and I don't mean to diminish the teachings that are out there in the retreat center world and various other teaching circumstances outside of the monastic community, but it's less common that you see this emphasis on simplicity, renunciation, and transcendence. And there's a lot going on that's really wonderful of developing the meditation practice, the meditation techniques, even growing attention to sila, morality, living by precepts. But sometimes one does get the flavor of psychological well-being being kind of the ultimate goal of all of this, and there are wonderful benefits and many good things happening along those lines, but not to forget that that's not the end point of what the Buddha was teaching, the end point being complete freedom. And our teacher's emphasis on remembering that, because this level of practice, and I'm not just referring to the monastic community, but to the very committed lay practitioners who have adopted, you know, levels of renunciation and levels of commitment to the goal in the household life. But if we take it just at that without too much reference to the full potential, then things can get a bit bleak or difficult or, you know, maybe more challenging than we have the energy and commitment for if we didn't have that perspective of where this could eventually lead and where it will eventually lead if we stick with it. And that full sense of freedom and the ways that our teachers refer to that and expound on that and remind us of that and exemplify that from their own practice and their own experience, not just talking textbook, but being there as examples for us of that complete and total freedom that is possible. You know, and I think of different ways that, and then also the emphasis to not get lost in the worldly aspects of our lives, to keep focused for the encouragement to keep focused on the goal. I remember just rereading Lhunpo Cha's biography and just being hit very strongly with, I can't remember exactly how it's phrased, but someone asking Lhunpo Cha, why doesn't he get more involved in knowing what's going on in the world of politics, the world of current events? And Lhunpo Cha's response of that he preferred to focus his attention on things that have an end. And that's why he didn't get involved, you know, so much with knowing what's happening out there in those realms. So that constant reminder that even though we're living in the world, we don't have to be of the world in that sense, that we keep our focus on things that have an end, the goal of practice. And the ways that the three of them use different, maybe terminology, different phrases, but all pointing in the same direction, like with Lhunpo Cha's teaching on the knowing quality of the mind, the pure knowing, the still flowing water of the mind that talks about it's both its active and pure reflective knowing qualities. The way he talks about and regards one of his major insights of seeing the mind separate from the objects of the mind. And just emphasizing the development of the full development of the path towards that end, towards that understanding of the separation of mind from mind objects, the ability to not hold on to, not cling, not follow our craving into the realm of the external objects, whether the objects are of the five physical senses or the objects that the mind itself, the intellect, throws up. There is that knowing quality, that pure puru, the one who knows, that can just know that, know those objects and not hold on to them, see them in their arising and passing away. So that's one Lhunpo Cha's often quoted ways of phrasing it, or Lhunpo Sumedho's constant referral to awareness, awareness itself, being with that knowing quality, dwelling in awareness, using consciousness in its expanded, more simplified version, that's not dependent on the sense basis, and establishing that quality and operating from that quality, reminding ourselves over and over again to step back and be with that awareness, pure awareness. I think of Lhunpo Pasano's regular reflections on the qualities of relinquishment, just like in earlier today in his reflection this afternoon, bringing up the quality of relinquishment. Oftentimes, you know, like with, when we chanted the Dhammacakka Sutta tonight, oftentimes Lhunpo Pasano will refer to those qualities of chago, patinisago, mutti, and alayo, and remind us over and over how important it is to keep those qualities in mind. Chago, giving over to, patinisago, relinquishment, mutti, freedom, anāyo, non-attachment, and referring to those mental qualities that are the kind of motions, mental motions towards relinquishment and letting go and freedom. Or the reminders of nirodha that he often refers to, not merely as cessation, but that the more extended, expanded quality of non-arising. And the quality of mind that those words refer to, and learning to experience those and to reflect on those and to get to know those qualities that refer to the transcendent results of this practice and the potential. One of the kind of practices that I like to do is finding kind of vocabulary words to help keep my mind in the proper frame when I'm engaging in meditation. And I've come up with an additional one from from the many ones that I use on a regular basis, words to just stimulate a certain quality of mind. And I think since, particularly since Lungpa Sumedho has been here, and just referring to the word, and then say with Lungpa Pasano's talk today about how we complicate our lives so much, that the word unentangled as a reference word to help induce kind of a perceptual state of mind of not getting so caught up in everything that we do, how we like to complicate our lives, how we proliferate and compound everything. And just the word unentanglement or disentanglement, but even more just that state of not being entangled with the mind, the objects of the mind, the world of the mind, the world of events, the world of me, the world of all of our plans and ideas and mental machinations that we constantly put ourselves through, and just backing off from that and resting with an unentangled state of mind, and always referring back to, you know, Upasaka Ghi's collection of teachings and her use of that word, unentangled, and how she refers to that quality of an inward staying, unentangled knowing, all outward going knowing cast aside. So that quality of an unentangled knowing, just that word, unentangled, kind of opens up some nice space in the mind. And I think that for me, that's a kind of a catch-all word for those teachings on transcendence from our three leaders that I've been talking about. So we've got the practice, the renunciation, the sense restraint, the precepts, the structure. We've got teachings on the goal and all of the meditations that were offered, the reflections on how to contemplate. And we're so fortunate that Lungpa Cha decided to do what he did and to establish a community and a legacy that we are all benefiting from every day. And to kind of honor that legacy by doing what we can in our own lives to keep at it, not to give up, to keep going, because we have this rare opportunity, and what else is there to do? So I'll leave it there for this night's reflection.